All right, Luke chapter 9. So a lot of this we've talked about as we went through both the Gospels of Matthew and Mark. So some of this is administrative. Hello, welcome. We've got the 12 who are sent out. Peter testify of Christ. Jesus foretells his death and resurrections. Transfigured on the mount, he heals and teaches. I think we're just going to move right along. We've talked about a lot of these things before. We do get something of particular mention that we haven't talked about yet in chapter 10. The chapter heading, well, we'll just start reading. Lindsay, will you take chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, please?
After these things, the Lord appointed other 70 also and sent them two and two before his face into every city and place, whither he himself would come. Therefore he said unto them, the harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he would send forth laborers into his harvest.
Okay, so there we have the 12 who are called. We have 70 who are also called. They're sent forth to go preach the gospel wherever. But here's an interesting verse. Verse 3 says, go your ways. Behold, I send you forth as lambs among wolves. Do you ever feel that way about our poor missionaries? It's just like, off you go. Yeah, they can be a bit naive and a little, depending on where they grow up, a little isolated. And a mission experience can be a real, oh my goodness, there's real life out here. Sister Urban?
On the internet, they talk about one missionary in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Submitting, you know, his request for him to be released because he's being tortured.
Yeah, it's a hard situation, and the family's all... Come on, U.S., do something more.
Yeah. One of my younger sons was robbed at gunpoint last week.
Oh, goodness.
He was calling to tell me about it. And kind of, first it was bravado because he said, I forgot to, you know, because he carries. And he said, I forgot to carry that day. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And then the next day it hit him. And he was upset. He was talking to my oldest son who was thinking, oh, I was robbed so many times on my mission at gunpoint. You know, it became old hat. And then he had to remember, oh, the first time was devastating. So
it is. It's something you kind of grow into. Getting robbed, right?
Well, he was in Argentina, but my nephew in Jamaica came home with bloody shirts from his robbings.
Oh, goodness.
They got robbed. Our missionaries get robbed a lot more often than we do.
It can be tough. And so those who are still sending people out into mission, don't worry. I mean, worry enough, but...
Oh, you know what? He wouldn't tell me about it because he didn't want me to worry, but he's absolutely fine with it.
Yeah.
He was being protected.
You know, I by and large, grew up in a very insulated Mormon home. I hadn't experienced a whole lot of life. And it's one of the critiques of Latter-day Saint missionary work is you really think you're going to send all of these young people out into the world, and you've got people who are dealing with all types of diseases and poverty and famine, and these missionaries are really just going to waltz in there and fix things for people. You know, my dad, he had an interesting experience. Oftentimes, you know, as Westerners, we tend to point our finger at Africa and say, that's where all the real problems are. And it was a concern that he had with these missionaries. I mean, by and large, he would receive these very naive, insulated missionaries, and he would send them into the furthest reaches of Western Africa, and they would have just crazy experiences. And there were quite a few who would request, and they'd say, President Judge, shouldn't we be, like, building wells and fixing up schools and building houses and do all these things? And he said, yeah, there is an appropriate place for that. But he says, you watch, you teach these people the restored gospel of Jesus Christ, and they won't need us to build the wells and the schools and the houses. There will be a power and a strength beyond their own that will come into these communities, and you will watch themselves fix themselves from the inside out. They won't have to wait on people to come fix things from the outside in. It'll happen. And he said it was hard because his Western sensibilities wanted to just go in there and fix things. And he really had to put his money where his mouth was. Do I believe that the restored gospel of Jesus Christ really can change not just individuals, but entire communities? And he said they watched it over and over and over.
Our son-in-law went to Albania, and that was
to the point where someone knifed him and almost slit his eye, but it was his eyelid. And the church was almost at the point that they're going to request no more missions there.
Yeah.
So there are some.
Some of the most difficult people I met in Germany were refugees from Albania.
Yeah. So it was quite a.
That's a hard place. You know, but also, I mean, I got to use that experience to learn a whole lot about the world. I have some, I don't know if I can still call them friends, but at one time I had friends in the Russian mob. They were interesting. So in Germany, you have a lot of people from Russia and a lot of people from Turkey. You have a lot of people from all over the world there now. But,
You can't have the same experience in D.C., by the way.
Yeah. Well, they're all over the place. And I finally figured out these people that you didn't need, I didn't need to fear them. I just needed to show a little respect, let them know who I was. And so I developed a habit where we would get to a new area and we'd kind of sit back and watch. So in Germany, there are these places called Fußgängerzonas. They're pedestrian areas, no cars allowed, and they're huge. And all of the stores are around these, and so people go to market every day. And it's great for missionaries because the people come to you. If you put yourself there, just everybody comes and you can talk to thousands of people a day. And so we'd hang out there and just kind of observe, you know, kind of who the local riffraff was, and you'd figure out who was in charge. And so in one of my areas, we did this and kind of figured out who looked like he was in charge. And so I walked over and introduced myself. Hi, I'm Elder Judd. I'm one of the new Mormon missionaries in the area. I can tell that this is kind of your place. I just wanted to show respect. We mean you no trouble at all. We're just here to help. And can we take you to dinner? My companion's like, what? And I said, well, just see what happens. Like,
work it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we did. We sat down and we talked about where he was from. And he'd come to Germany 12 years earlier. And he was trying to learn English. And he's like, so whenever, and he would always speak to us in his broken Russian English/German. It was fantastic. But he became quite a good friend. One night we came out of an appointment and my companion's bike was stolen. And so we're thinking, great. I mean, it took us an hour to ride our bikes out to this place. It was going to take us, you know, a whole lot longer to walk back. And so we start the long walk home and all of a sudden Yuri drives by. And Yuri drove a Cadillac, and you don't see Cadillacs in Germany. And so everybody knew who, and he was kind of in charge of the underworld of this little German town. And so he comes by and he says, why you not ride bicycle? And, oh, hi, Yuri. Elder Goff, he got his bike stolen. What? Someone steal Jesus' bike? Yeah, it happens. That not right. I walk you home. And so he drove. Nobody was ever allowed in his car. And so we walked, and Yuri just kind of puttered along. It took us about an hour. And so he's just in his car, and we're walking my bike, and my companion's just walking. And so we finally get back to the apartment, and we say, hey, you know, thanks for walking us home, Yuri. And he's like, what are you going to do? And we said, well, we'll figure something else out. A couple of days later, we come down, you know, after morning study and prayer and all of that, we come down out of the apartment, and there's Yuri with the bike. We're like, Yuri, where'd you find the bike? Okay, direct quote, I find bicycle, no ask question. So who knows what happened? There's some poor guy with broken thumbs somewhere. Hopefully, yeah. But I mean, it can, you know, like verse 3, go your ways, behold, I send you forth as lambs among wolves. And it can be difficult when we go out there and we try to share the gospel in atmospheres that are either physically dangerous or emotionally dangerous or spiritually dangerous. But to remember that we have the Lord's power with us. Let's jump over to a parable that Jesus kind of gives about this whole idea. So it keeps teaching over to Luke chapter 10, verse 21. No, let's go to Luke chapter 10, verse 25. We'll start there. So he's teaching these things. A certain lawyer comes up, tempts him, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said unto him, what is written in the law? How readest thou? And he answering said, Thou shalt love the Lord God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. And he said unto them, Thou hast answered right, do this, and thou shalt live. But he, willing to justify himself, said to Jesus, And who is my neighbor? And then we get this fantastic parable of the Good Samaritan. So I'd just like to read it together, verses 30 through 35. Pull some of your insights. I'll help fill in some of the cultural gaps that might help us better understand what's going on. But Trudy, can we start with you? You read as much as you feel like, and then poke Marcia, and then we'll go over to Cameo. Or are you still waiting on your... Okay, good to go.
Yeah.
What was going to put you on hold for hours?
When I have to call the insurance.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. She was so nice and...
I'm not on top of it, so there was like other phone calls I have to make before I make that phone call, no. And so I have to do it this afternoon.
She was so nice and said, if I have an earbud in, it's not because I have to be on this phone call like on hold for hours. I was like, okay, that was so nice of you. Well, good luck with that. Okay, ready to go? Go ahead.
And Jesus answering said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead.
Okay, let's talk about that for just a minute. Have you noticed that people are always going up to Jerusalem? Now, Rivka, why are people, is that literally how it goes? Is it up? I've never been there. So it's up. And what's around it? Yeah. So this is quite the trek. So if you're
okay, it's not Utah kind of up, but it's
but still for the area.
Yeah.
It's and so you start at Jerusalem, and then in the Institute manual it talked about how there, at least in this path, they called it the Red Way because it was often a place where thieves and robbers would hang out. And you have to descend 3,500 feet relatively quickly. And so it's quite, I guess the terrain is rather treacherous. I mean, I'm sure now it's improved. But at the time, this is not a trip for the faint of heart. This is something that is going to require planning and forethought. And so a certain man is going up from Jerusalem down to Jericho. Anyway, okay, keep going.
And by chance, there came down a certain priest that way. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise, gave them to the host and said unto him, Take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee.
And then Jesus asks the question, Which of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among thieves? And he said, He that showed mercy on him. Then Jesus says to him, Go and do thou likewise. So let's pick apart these three different groups and look at why does Jesus choose these three classes of individuals and lessons that we can possibly learn. I think we're probably pretty comfortable with priests and Levites, right? Okay, Levites are taking care of the ordinances. Priests may not specifically be doing the ordinances there at the temple, but they are the religious leaders of their people for that time. Samaritans, though, give me a good definition for a Samaritan, other than person from Samaria. I know you were thinking it, Jen. Yeah. Mudblood, right? Thank you, Harry Potter. Okay? And so they're half Jewish and half what else? Fill in the blank, right? It's really, so what happens, here's my accurate map of the Judea, well, that's not very accurate. That's probably one of the worst ones I've done. So there's, that's even worse, but anyway. Okay? Sea of Galilee, River Jordan, Dead Sea. We've got the Kingdom of Israel in the north, Kingdom of Judah in the south. Eventually, the Kingdom of Israel is destroyed by the Assyrians that come in from the north, take Israel and disperse them through the then known Assyrian Empire. Okay? They become the 10 lost tribes of Israel. Okay? Judah is thinking, oh, whew, glad this isn't going to happen to us because we've got the temple, we've got we're going to be okay. Lehi and others come and say, guys, it's going to happen to you also. You got to be careful. Nah, how could it possibly happen to us? 600 BC, Babylon comes in from the east. They sack Jerusalem. They carry off captives a lot over to Babylon. They bring a lot of their people over. What happens is we have this area. That's not too accurate, but it gives you the idea. We have this area where a lot of people, we have Jews who are intermingling with the Assyrians or the Babylons with these foreigners. And so we have this area of Samaria that have a lot of people that according to the purebloods, and this is where the Harry Potter analogy actually really works quite well, is the purebloods are saying, well, our lines, we never intermingled with the Goyim, with the Howleys, with the Gentiles, right? I'm thinking of every other word. With the, what's the Spanish one for non...
Gringos,
yeah, there you go. And I mean, we tend to have kind of an us-them mentality even still today in current cultures. You know, even like me saying...
Like the Greeks said they're barbarians.
Right, yeah. A barbarian for the Greek was anyone who didn't speak Greek because to them it sounded like they were saying bar, 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 bar. And that's where the barbarian... That's what they thought the people were saying. Bar, bar, bar. So they call them barbarians. Kind of a funny play on a sound. But does that make sense? So the Samaritans, they're the ones who kind of occupy this space. And, doing air quotes here for the recording, that's why the purebloods would walk around Samaria to get up to the northern kingdom, or at least the cities that were still up here, because they didn't want to be tainted by the people who had chosen to intermarry with those who were non-covenant. And it was just a big...
They were snobs.
Yeah, they were. How do you feel about that? But we all tend to do it in our own way, which we'll talk about in a minute. Go ahead. It was.
You weren't allowed to marry outside the covenant. Mm-hmm. So, and in Nephites and Lamanites, right? He cursed them and made them black skins so that they wouldn't, for the time, intermarry. So for them, maybe that an uncharitable attitude wasn't the right thing, but still trying to maintain a cultural distance. That's what God had asked them to do.
Yeah, and so there is this loyalty that's impressive in a way, but you push that too far and it turns into a snobbery or a tribalism. This really turns into us versus them, and it can be ugly. So, looking at the parable, Jesus says, this guy's doing it right. The religious insiders, they're the ones who are doing it wrong. And it tends to be a message through these chapters of Luke that Jesus, he tells again and again and again. Anything else about the parable of the Good Samaritan that you'd like to mention or ask about?
It's talking to us today, too, even though he was saying the priesthood has fallen from being two priests, it's political, you know, and it's been, you know, kind of desecrated by the time Christ was coming, and they didn't acknowledge him, who he was, and they should have acknowledged him.
Yeah.
He was the rightful heir to inherit through the royal line of David.
And some argue that his cousin John the Baptist was rightful heir to the role of high priest.
Right, because of his father.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were, you know, desecrating everything that they should have been believed in. So in his way, he said the Samaritan, it's by his works and not what his heritage is.
Yeah. That's what we do, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Tyler?
And as much as I don't want to be a priest or Levite, we have to understand, too, that they were actually trying to be good people. You know, if a Levite touches somebody with blood, he can no longer...
Can't do his job.
You know, there's... It's not right, but it's in some ways understandable.
Yeah. Because...
It sound like they were just evil people.
Right? Oh, and it's fascinating because we do. We turned into the exact kind of snobs that we're pointing the finger at. Saying, oh. Such religious snobs. I'm glad that I'm more worried about equality or service or whatever, like the Samaritan. I'd never be like those people. And when we hear ourselves saying the "those people" type of rhetoric, I hope that's always a red flag that we're recognizing, oh my goodness, I'm guilty of this same thing in some way. And so we do. I think we should have some patience. Hopefully we'd find ourselves looking beyond perhaps the letter of the law at what really needs to be done here. But at the same time, if you're doing that all of the time, because you're right, especially the Levite, I've got to do my job. But that guy's hurting. What do I do? There's some conflict there. And so, again, this is given as a parable, and I'd like to think that, you know, this priest and this Levite have also had a history of helping people other times in their lives.
Well,
but
Levite might think he's helping more people by going to the temple and performing. And so when we don't stop for the guy on the side of the road on our way to the temple.
Yeah. It's a little more nuanced than just these guys bad, this guy good. Remember, Jesus is answering a specific question with a specific story. And who is my neighbor? Right? So to have that open-heartedness toward all humanity, that's something I'm really grateful for, to Joseph Smith's example for. Very willing to, regardless of where the people were coming from, rather gregarious, welcoming individual. Vanessa, Sister Urban.
Also, the example you gave of your Russian friend saying that's Jesus's...
Yeah, that's still Jesus's mic.
He was really saying the essential. He saw you as a representative of Jesus, and even though he was from... kind of a society that loves to take over, he seemed the pure spirit of the missionaries, and that's reaching out.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was great. He would come by and say, "Hey, so and so's mom just died. Maybe she would like a visit." I'm like, the Russian mob is giving us contacts. A little scary, but and often, I mean, we didn't really end up baptizing a lot of people, but I think we did some good in the community. In fact, I had a companion in that area who was from Samoa, and he was the first Samoan that had ever been to that little town, and so we were in the newspaper for that. And then we just kind of became known in the community. We volunteered at a youth center, and we were in the newspaper for that. And then the Salt Lake Winter Olympics were there, so we were in the newspaper for that. And then my companion got his bike stolen. You know, Yuri found it for him. But before we knew, there was an article in the newspaper about Mormon missionaries have bikes stolen. I mean, and it was just, we really tried to jump into the community. They weren't listening to us knocking doors. So we had to, we did whatever we could to just try to let them know we are here to help. And if you don't want to listen to our message, well, at least let us just be good people and we can all get along. Oh, yeah. He was doing it kind of in his own way, right?
Yeah.
Vanessa?
I was just going to throw out here, and for one of my classes at BYU, I learned that this parable can also be a way to think about Jesus and his mission for us, right? That he went from Jerusalem, heaven, down to Jericho, the earth where we are, right? And he is a Samaritan, a half-breed, he's God and man kind of thing, and that what his sacrifice for us and being the healer and paying for, so anyway.
Yeah. That's a deeper part of the metaphor there. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else Good Samaritan related? Okay, I want to jump up 5 chapters then. There are a lot of other good things we can talk about, but kind of following along this thread of casting different people as, well, you are other. And we could say that the priest and the Levite were doing it to the man who fell among thieves, or it could be us judging the priest and the Levite for not doing things how we think they ought to. But just for a moment of self-reflection and asking ourselves, you know, kind of where do we fit? Chapter 15, then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. Now we talked before, publicans, they were the tax collectors. Let's pretend, Heather, that you're a publican today. So what would happen is Heather would...
Money.
It does.
It's lucrative.
Yeah. So let's say that Heather is in charge of collecting Illinois property tax.
Oh my
And we all just shake our heads and say, oh. Heather, oh, go ahead, Ed.
I see the parallel, like, with your situation there in Germany and then Jesus' situation. These people who are hated outcasts, you know, they're looked down on. They're ironically the ones going to Jesus.
They are.
The publicans going to Jesus, the Russian mafia accepting you.
I don't think he heard a single thing that we had to teach. He just, hopefully he recognized some goodness. And yeah, he did.
You don't know how much they...
You're right.
What Jesus taught.
You're, well, and I think it's also interesting. These groups flocked to Jesus. Do the same groups flock to us? Or have we set up these religious enclaves where we, by and large, all look and talk and act the same? And if you don't fit the mold, then maybe you're like, ooh, those people, they all kind of take care of themselves, but I don't belong with them. And Ed, I'm glad you feel like you belong. I mean, is Ed the most recent convert here? So at least we got one. But, I mean, in these next three stories, they really get us to take a good look at ourselves and our religious communities and ask, how are we doing? To finish the Heather is the tax collector. So you would be given by the state a quota that you have to meet. Anything that you collect above and beyond that, that's your take-home pay. Now, we don't know what Heather's quota is, and so we're always a little suspicious. We're thinking, is this what I really have to pay to the state, or is this Heather just lining her pockets? And so you can see why... You what?
I've got bills to pay.
Well, right? And we're thinking the same thing. We're like, well, we got to pay ours too. And so they were always very suspicious. First of all, the publicans worked for the Romans, which makes them other. And then also, are they really just doing their job, or are they just being greedy? And these are the people who come to Jesus. They see some solace. They see a soul who is willing to take them and teach them and commune and eat with them. Very lonely being a publican at that time. So, all these people are there. The Pharisees are saying, look who's eating with Jesus. And I think we have to remember that Jesus is kind of speaking to the religious establishment in these three parables. Okay? Cameo, will you take verses 3 through 7?
Yeah. Oh, chapter 15.
Right? Yep.
And he spake this parable unto them, saying, what man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he called together his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance.
Okay. Question? Cameo, how much do you know about sheep?
Not very
much. Okay.
A lot.
You know a lot about sheep?
I studied this, yes. Sheep and shepherds, I love that.
Oh, really? Have you ever been a shepherd?
Nope.
I have an uncle who is an actual sheep farmer.
Oh.
No, I just like the analogies.
The analogies are pretty good. Well, I'm going to pick on Cameo because maybe she doesn't know as much. Yeah.
Can I ask a quick question?
Oh, yes, please.
So when he leaves the 99 in the wilderness, to me that sounds kind of scary.
A little dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't know how that fits with me. So go ahead and stop.
So, that's right, they do have each other. My uncle Gordon, he's a sheep farmer in Enoch, Utah. Don't worry, it's still there. Hasn't been translated yet. If you've ever been there, I don't think it will anytime soon. It's just north of Cedar City, if you know where that is. It's that small. And there are quite a few herds of sheep. I remember a few times going down there to visit my aunt and uncle. And you would be driving down the frontage road, and all of a sudden, and you'd just be stuck for a long time until those dumb sheep would just decide, okay, time to go. Marilyn, how does a sheep get lost?
Sheep don't have a natural instinct on how to get home, so if they wander away, they don't have a natural direction. They're one of the few animals on this earth that doesn't.
Aren't they nearsighted because they're always like with their face in the grass? I read that somewhere.
Yeah, I did.
They're nearsighted animals, so they don't have very good long-range vision.
Well, they don't have any like internal clock. Like with if you're somewhere, you kind of know where you've been coming from. But once they get away from the home stretch, they're lost. If they don't have a shepherd to tell them where to go, they don't. They can't find.
Such rebellious animals. Right? What are they doing?
They also don't know what's good for them. If the shepherd takes them to a bad field, they'll eat bad food.
Yeah. I mean, so hence the analogy, oh, they are such sheep. They're just such followers. Right?
Well, when you go to the market, they have a Judas sheep that takes all those sheep into the thing, and the Judas sheep knows how to get out, and everybody else gets slaughtered.
Gets slaughtered, yeah.
Judas sheep.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. Mm-hmm.
So it might be left alone to starve. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think Jesus is citing that. This is someone that would be not desired by the major group, but he loves them.
Yeah.
He wants to survive.
Yeah. President McKay gave a great explanation of this parable. Actually, of this parable, the parable of the lost coin, and then the parable of the prodigal son. And he pointed out, you know, and I said, oh, they're such rebellious animals. Elder or President McKay pointed out that in the parable of the lost sheep, the sheep gets lost because it's just, as you said, was moseying along trying to find food. And there are some of us that get lost because we are just worried about the pressures of the day. We're just trying to get by. And before we know it, our internal clocks get off and we find ourselves in foreign pastures and we don't know how to come home. And my hope is that we'd have patience. You know, we tend to think of family members or friends who are no longer in the flock of the church, and we think, oh, such rebellious people. Some of them have just kind of got swept along with the current of modern philosophies, trends, social ideals, whatever. I have quite a few friends that I grew up with in Utah, and, you know, they're flirting with disaffection from the church. And given the direction that the herd, meaning Western American post-Enlightenment culture, is going, it's easy to just go right along with that. And I can see that the types of things that they post and they call and talk with me about, they're just trying to get by. They're trying to survive. You know, I'm going to go teach a class at Northwestern after this, and for a lot of the students there, I mean, they are ridiculed for being actual religious practitioners. The thought is, oh, people still do that?
And they're at Northwestern.
Yeah. And it's like they are looked down on because the idea is, well, once you've matured and seen the light, you don't need religion anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very heavy presupposition that our society tends to hold on to.
Well, but sheep are highly intelligent. They remember faces and voices for years. You can be gone for years and go back, and the sheep will still recognize who you are.
Wow.
They just don't have some natural instincts to take care of themselves, so they need that shepherd. And I just think about us. We're here in a strange place. We don't know a lot of things about this world. And without our shepherd, we are lost.
Yeah, we really are. Cameo?
Sorry. It seems like just within the last few weeks, I've had some of the closest people come to me and talk about leaving the church. And it, like, tears my heart apart. But my best friend asked, like, something I think about is, like, will Cameo still love me if I leave? And I think, kind of like, I don't know, my parents' generation, like, a child, like, makes such an extreme choice, you know, like, do you love them or you stick to your guns, you know? And recently I've been thinking about the scriptures we've read today, and being here, I've thought a lot about that picture and the Good Samaritan. And And like, I just have this overwhelming feeling of like, no matter their choices, like, love, what is like the great commandment, you know? And then the second great commandment is just this overpowering of love, and that if we can continue to love, that lost sheep will be found.
Yeah. And so often we think we're the ones that have to go find the sheep. You know, President Uchtdorf, either last two conferences ago, he talked about how the Lord is the shepherd. He will find our job. And to answer your question, Melanie, well, what about, I mean, the Lord's going after, well, what about the rest of us? That seems a little, but they do. They have one another. And my uncle explained it to me that if the sheep are all together, other predators will just see that mass and recognize too many. And so as long as they stick together, then the predators are much less likely to come. I mean, they may try to get someone from the edge or one that has strayed a little far from the flock. But even if a shepherd's not there or a dog or whatever to chase a predator away, just that mass of sheep is rather... ominous. That was the word that I was thinking of, but it wasn't coming. There is safety in sticking with the body of the sheep. Now, maybe it's not very interesting. Maybe you get sick of smelling the person next to you. Maybe you can't get the best view of what's out there to see. But it's safe, and there's an analogy that my mission president gave me of missionaries. He said, you know, missionaries are great, but they're a little like manure. He says, spread out, they do a lot of good. When they just clump together, they stink. You know, because you get missionaries and we just kind of come together and we just talk about whatever. And we weren't affecting a whole lot of change for good. And I wonder if Latter-day Saints, yeah, sometimes we do. We just want to clump together because it's safe and it's comfortable and it's familiar. I'll drop that analogy. They don't. They've always got buddy sheep right there with them, right? Okay, here's the next lost thing. Sister Haglund, would you be willing to read just a couple verses? Yes, Luke chapter 15, verses 8, 9, and 10, please. And think about how did this item get lost.
Either what woman, having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, did not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it. And when she had found it, she called her friends and her neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I had lost. Likewise, I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth.
All right. So how do you lose your coins? Do we ever?
3-year-old at home?
Right? Kids grab stuff, neglect, not being responsible. Do we ever lose souls for those same reasons? 3-year-olds. No, parenting is rough. And sometimes, I mean, we've got surprise state conference coming up, and Lindsay and I are like 2 hours watching a video with the kids. Ugh.
They need to start. Side note: they need to start doing audio recordings at least, because I never hear anything.
It is
stake leaders say ever any of those meetings because I just don't hear anything.
Yeah, it's managing the.
So they need to record it, so then I can listen to it later, and then I'll get something out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm grateful for the example of showing my kids we go, even though it's not convenient and easy and even uplifting. I'm sure it's uplifting, but like, I just have no idea.
No, absolutely. I get nothing. I don't even know what they talk about.
All right, so yes, we know 3-year-olds sometimes make it difficult, but are we guilty of neglect?
Oh, yeah.
How do we fix it? Work harder, do better.
I think compassion goes a huge long way. That's something I really learned over time. And as our child, like our oldest has this major, like you did something wrong. It is fault.
He has a compassion deficiency.
And I think that's because of me. I think like maybe it was.
Oh, sweet! I am absolved.
Right. like, you know, if he spilled his milk when he was little, like, I feel like I was too harsh. I feel like, and I really regret that now, and I see my mistakes in him. And so I'm trying to help him get over that, recognizing that it was my fault. But at the same time, like, compassion, like, I'm so sorry you lost your coin. Mistakes happen. We all make mistakes. It's not, how did you do this? Why didn't you put it in the right spot? Like, if you were the same way every single time, then you won't. Anyway, that doesn't do any good.
I noticed that this morning, because I always misplace my shoes. And I asked Lindsay, have you seen my shoes? And I was expecting, like, and she's just like, no, I haven't seen them. I was so grateful that I didn't get the riot act about my, if you always put them in the same, because she's right, but, okay, I was about to say something else, but that's going to make Lindsay sound like Satan. Right, right. Oh, she's fantastic. But notice, who is it that points out Adam and Eve's nakedness? It's not God that comes down and is like, you guys, of all the trees in the garden, I told you to stay from one.
Seriously.
Come on. You're such dummies.
Melanie? That was one of the things I was thinking about, you know, is how kind he was towards them and the words that he chose to say to them, you know, after they found out, like, he was not mean at all, and I remember thinking, like, oh, I've got to be a better parent, because I'm like, Lindsay, I'm like, why did you do this?
Yeah, one of his titles is the accuser, and we do that, right, to each other? Yeah. Was that something?
Yeah, so I'm trying to, like, analogy, pieces. So she loses silver, right? But in the other analogy, like, the sheep are people. So is the silver people, and so are we neglecting people and that's how they go away? Are we neglecting ourselves when we go away? Are we neglecting good work? Like,
it could be all.
What's the straight across?
I'm going to say yes.
Because I think the answer, I think the conversation changes. Like, how do we neglect each other such that we lose our children from the church? How do we neglect each other that we lose our neighbors from friendship? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a different conversation than how do I lose my godliness today by being overbearing or by being judgmental or by being, like, you know?
Well, I think it's just being self-aware that there are things to be lost just because, just by not paying attention. So I'm going to stick with my answer, yes.
I like that it's like, it can apply to your situation, your circumstance. You can hear that story and it can answer the questions.
Well, that's why parables are such masterful teaching tools. It's so open. Go ahead.
I bet you just put it as for your stewardship and whatever your stewardship is. Because her stewardship was to take care of her money that day, whatever. But
yeah.
Our kids are our stewardship, our friends are our stewardship.
Yeah, could be lots of things.
Precious. Mm-hmm. Well, it can be testimonies lost through anything that's precious.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when you're talking about raising your little ones, as an older person, I see how quick that time goes by when you're with them. And I try and emphasize that to my daughter as she's surrounded by all these little ones that, you know, everybody.
Oh, we think it's never going to end.
Yeah, you just think of it then when you're the ends to it, that it seems forever. But in just a short time.
Like, I remember before Natalie, we found out Lindsay was pregnant with Natalie. I mean, we were just like, we could be out of diapers. It was like, just that prospect was so exciting. Maybe someday, honey. Maybe someday. No more diapers. Okay. Now, notice here what Jesus refers to this next parable as. In the chapter heading, it says, it gives the parables of the lost sheep, of the piece of silver, and of the prodigal son. Now, that's a title that Christianity has given to this next parable in verses 11 through the end of the chapter. Look what Jesus calls it. Well, he doesn't call it anything. What does he point out in verse 11? A certain man had two sons. And we always focus on that first one, on the one who leaves and comes back. Now, that's a fantastic story. My guess is we're pretty well familiar with it. I want to focus on the other prodigal.
The older son.
The older son.
Responsible.
He's also lost. Just in a different way. All right? And again, speaking to a group that chooses to come to a religion class on a Thursday morning, my guess is there aren't a whole lot of wanderers here, that you're going to be looking for salvation through discovery, through going out into the world and trying to find what does the world have to offer that I can fill in the hole of in my heart with. This second son possibly sees the example of his brother and he thinks, no, well, I'm going to find salvation through not self-discovery, but self-righteousness. I am going to dot every I, cross every T. God is going to have to give me blessings because I am going to keep all of the rules. But there's a danger in that as well. There's a great Catholic author. Her name's Flannery O'Connor. She wrote lots of just super insightful.
Everything at that arises must convert.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite lines from a character is that one of her characters says something like this, that they tried to avoid sin so that he could avoid Jesus. Now, how many of us have thought, ooh, repenting, I hope that's something I never have to do anytime soon. When the truth is, we've all got to do it continually all the time. So, getting ahead of myself, the brother leaves, he comes back, we're going to focus on him. We're going to do verses 21, 22, 23. Let's see. Sally, did you get to read enough? Do you feel neglected if we move on?
No.
That's okay. Sister Holbrook, will you pick up for us?
Sure.
21, 22, 23.
Bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry.
And verse 24 also.
For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry.
Now the interesting thing about those who choose to wander is oftentimes there is a rock bottom. There is a recognition of, I've gone too far. I've sold my birthright. Things are not good. This isn't working. I need help. With the other brothers, that's not always the case. We tend to think, I'm fine. I've got this figured out. Now, to be fair, the younger son, he's already taken his inheritance. That was tantamount to saying, Dad, I wish you were dead. Because you don't get inheritances until the father passes away. Dad, I wish you were dead. I don't care about you. I just care about what you can do for me. Just die already. Give me what I want. That's an awful thing to say, especially in a culture where those relationships are so important. But he leaves, he comes back. The father is taking all of these things. Now, in the long scheme, who do all of these things belong to? The father, and eventually, the brother. And so, the ring, the robe, the fatted calf. And what's brother's reaction? Sister Holbrook, if you would, verse 25. Okay, so he's out there probably doing what he's supposed to do. Now he has opportunity to music and dancing and, hey, what's going on? I want to go join in, but keep going.
And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, thy brother is come and thy father hath taken thy wife, and he hath received him safe and sound.
And here's his reaction.
And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf.
Stop right there. Thank you very much. What about me? What I've been here. I've done the work. I've been loyal. I've been faithful. I've been committed. And this guy shows up and you throw him a party? I remember in the German version of the Prodigal Son movie that came out in the 80s. Do you remember that one, the brothers and the piano? And do you remember that at all? It's horrible. not a horrible, but it's just super campy. It's in the German one, I loved it, because what happens is the one brother who is kind of portrayed in the video as being able to talk his way out of anything. He gets into the advertising business. He starts doing drugs and alcohol, and eventually is at rehab, and his brother and his dad go pick him up from rehab and bring him home, and they throw a party. The son really is trying to get his life together, and the one brother just can't forgive him. But in the German version, there's this one place where the older brother, he just slams down his hands and he says, "Ich bin der Gute hier." I am the good one. I am the good one. But it just sounded so horrible in a bad German translation. Ich bin der Gute hier. But we sometimes tend to think, I deserve. Sometimes we look around the world and we see people who have what we want, emotionally, materially, and we think, I'm the good one here. Why isn't that coming to me? And it jades us. It makes us heavy. It makes us angry. It surely does not develop compassion. Now, the father's response, well, getting ahead of myself, both sons are prodigal. The one chooses to leave. The other brother, he's also estranged from his father at this time. The father has to go out and get both sons. Did you see that? The one is out there. I'm doing what I'm supposed to. Oh, my dad's in there having a party with my sinner of a brother. Well, I'm not going in. He is estranged as well. Now, remember, to which group is Jesus speaking? He's with the publicans. He's with the sinners. And the Pharisees come and they accuse, saying, you shouldn't be with these people. And so he tells a story about kind of the first group of people. They have left. They have come back. They are with and they recognize who Jesus Christ is. Notice what he does with the second brother, the Pharisees and Sadducees group. The father comes out and he says, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. And we never hear the end of the story. He leaves that one open-ended. We know the wanderers come back and are safe. We don't know if the older brother ever goes home. And that's tough, you know, because we tend to think, well, at least I'm not doing drugs. At least I'm not immoral. At least I'm not fill in the blank. Go ahead, Melanie.
But I think it's something, I don't know, I struggle with this a lot. Like, it's just pride. Like, it's feeling like you're in the good place or you're doing so much better than X, Y, and Z. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've got two brothers that are not active in the church, mm-hmm. live the other prodigal's lifestyle, and I tend to sometimes...
We all do.
You know?
Yeah.
Say those things and,
so,
and without even... And
so I'm going to ask you a question. Don't answer it out loud.
Okay.
So what's worse? Wandering or having a sense of moral superiority? Don't answer it out loud. I mean, they're both sins.
Right. Definitely.
And it's hard. Both versions need saving. And it's by coming to the Father, through experiencing the atonement, that both versions can find healing. Mr. Tyler, Vanessa.
I have a cure for the second.
Yes.
If you get on your knees and say, Father, what do I need to work on?
Yeah. What lack I yet?
He lets you know pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
He says, now this is just the first of the list, which you can handle. The rest later.
That's a hard prayer to say when you're really willing to do the work.
It's a humbling.
It really is.
Especially because you know that he's just given you
Yeah.
item, and tomorrow you're going to get, you know, when you get that one conquered, there's another
mm-hmm.
one.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take long to.
Good thought. Vanessa?
Another thing that I was thinking about, right, his complaint is, I didn't ever get to celebrate my good work, right? You didn't ever give me a party. And I think sometimes when, as members of the church who try hard to keep our commandments, we need to take those opportunities to feel the joy that is, as Elder Nelson was talking about, right, that's available to us because of the righteous choices we're making. Because that's what's going to, he had all the rings, he had all the, mm-hmm. but he didn't realize that because he didn't take that opportunity to bask in the spirit and the joy, the good consequences of his choices.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, then I don't think we're going to have trouble with celebrating our own when we're the wanderer and other people's wanderings when they come back, right? Because we have partaken of what we have been earning through our, or being gifted through our obedience.
And we recognize that I have been with the Father the whole time.
Right. We've had the companionship of the Holy Spirit. We've gone to the temple. We've been whatever it is, right? And sometimes I think, at least I get so caught up in I'm doing what I need to be doing. Like I did exercise video this morning, right? And at the very end, so corny those videos. But at the very end, she's like, now that you're done, take a minute and congratulate yourself. You just did a hard workout, right? So I don't want to be like, oh, I'm so righteous. No, but the idea is, right, like, oh, I really felt the Spirit this morning when I was saying my prayers. That's wonderful. And that happened because I did all those other things yesterday that were harder to do or whatever, right? To take those moments and feel that joy to motivate or to, so we don't find ourselves lacking as he was feeling in the rewards that are the just consequences of obedience.
Yeah, yeah, well said. Sister Urban, and then I gotta let you go.
Also in the bigger picture, the Father can represent our Father, Heaven.
Oh, totally.
And we and children inherit certain gifts and treasures from Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And if we appreciate, like this young lady just said, if we appreciate them and just say, savor each day the rewards we get, like the sun is coming out after the fog, you know, and all of a sudden our children have learned something after reminding them 20 times, you know, to say, okay, it's worth it, saying it 20 times.
Yeah. One last observation. When I was teaching seminary out west, I'd noticed if I had a class that was pretty well split between wanderers and older brothers, they weren't very successful. Because the wanderers felt judged by the older brothers, and the older brothers wouldn't ever really give the wanderers a chance. One year I volunteered to teach a pilot after-school seminary class. I mean, it was kind of remedial seminary. And if any of my students who are in that class hear that, they'll nod their heads and say, yeah, it was. I mean, it was for those that couldn't wake up early enough to do early morning, were in trouble with credits for after, so they couldn't take it during the day when seminary was available out there in Utah. And so this was kind of like the last ditch option. That class was awesome. Because they recognized we're wanderers, and we need help. And the really good kids that were there, they weren't the older brothers. Lindsay's brother was one of them. He's got a pretty big heart. And he recognized, sure, these kids might be smoking out, you know, behind the seminary building after class, but they're coming and they're trying. And he was able to look past kind of the outside stuff and realized, I've got some things to learn from them. And they sure had some things to learn from him. It was beautiful. It really was. So, message, we're all lost in a way. We all need to be found, and I praise the Lord for figuring out how to come after us. He knows what it's going to take. I believe Nephi when he said, for surely the Lord God doeth nothing save it be for the good of the world. And sometimes it feels like, Lord, where are you? Why aren't you coming after me faster? There's a wolf right there. What's going on? Or were that last coin? Just pick up the edge of the carpet. I'm here. Find me. God knows how to find us. Our job is to respond when we feel him tugging. And sometimes what he tugs on are those heartstrings. And it feels like, oh, this is not fun. But he does come after us. I bear testimony of it in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Sister Haglund, will you pray for us?
Sure.
Thank you.